Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
And the ball game's over, and the Giants have won Super Bowl 46.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
All right, 3:07 on this Monday morning. McMonagle here with you, 888-808-1019. That's the number to call in. Hope everybody had a good weekend. We got some baseball. I was busy all weekend, man. Yesterday, I told you the big gift. I don't know if you remember the story of the big gift, but I got my kids for their dual birthdays. They're both within 2 weeks of, 2 weeks of each other. My little guy is at the end of May, and my oldest is tomorrow now. It's his birthday. So we do like a dual birthday. I got them a big gift. I got them a basketball hoop. And I was telling them all week, like, you know, as we do, we bribe them. You know, let's be honest. We bribe our kids. There's no other way to say it. And we threaten them with taking away things when they don't do. So it's like, you better stop. Otherwise, I'm not going to give you that big present I got you guys for your birthday, blah, blah, blah. You know how I used it. And so I brought out the basketball hoop, still in the box, because I didn't have a chance to put it together by the time it came. And they were excited. They were pretty excited. When, oh, basketball, yay. And then my little guy looked up and he goes, all right, so where's the big present? Like, what do you mean where? This is the big present. So I took that big present and took all day yesterday by myself putting together a basketball hoop. I knew I was in trouble when I looked down at my phone, and I was an hour and a half in, and I just put the rim on the backboard. I'm like, yeah, this is going to be a problem. This is going to be a real, real problem. But sometimes, I have to admit, like, those are, I wish I, you know, could have really relaxed and enjoyed myself a little bit. I brought the TV outside, so I'm watching the Met game while I do it out in the backyard early yesterday morning. And I wish I could have relaxed a little bit. But there's something about, like, the idea of just, like, putting something together. The day before, I put together a new outdoor table for the backyard, you know, patio set or whatever you call it. I like just chilling, playing music out in the sun, and putting things together. I don't know why. It can be frustrating at times when you, because I always make, you know, I don't know if you guys, when you put stuff together, make the simplest of mistakes. Like, just, you put the screw in the wrong way, right? You put the screw in, it's supposed to go from the outside in, and you've already tightened it, and I'm like, does it matter? Should I put it in the, like, is this going to come back 5 steps down the line where I'm like, oh, man, this is supposed to be on the, like, I'll do something stupid like that at least, I don't know, five, six times throughout the process. I'll forget to put something on. I'll put the screw in the wrong way. I'll do something. I'm like, oh, I'll, you know, they had these two poles that connect from the stand to the main pole. I put them in backwards. I had to switch sides. Like, just something. There's always something. And then there's always an issue too. Like, nothing's ever simple. I put together this table, and the chairs at the head of the table come with arms. The other chairs have no arms, but two of the chairs come with arms for the two heads of the table. And they sent me 3 left arms and only one right arm. So I'm like, and you know, you're not sure how stupid you are. Like, that's what else is too. Like, it takes you forever to realize something's wrong because you're in your mind. You're like, wait a minute. So, like, I'm standing there at the chair, and I got these two arms in my hand, and I'm like, I think they're the same, where the holes are on the same side. And I'm like, how would this? And it took me a half hour before I realized, yeah, no, these aren't right. Because you just think you're an idiot.
But at least that one wasn't your fault.
It's not my fault, but it took me a half hour when I should have just been like, no, this is wrong. I don't trust myself. Yeah. I think I'm stupid. And I'll sit there forever, and then the same, or and then vice versa. I'll try and do whatever. I'll try and make a screw fit into something. I'm like, and in my mind, I'm like, I know I did this wrong, but I don't care. I'm just like, and then because I don't know how many steps back you got to go. It's, but But at the same time, it is, it's relaxing. It is a way to like say, and the other thing is too, when I'm doing things, especially for the kids or the family like that, and I'm out there putting stuff together, it's easy to just say, honey, you got to take care of the kids. I don't know what to tell you. I mean, they can run around back here, but I don't have time to play with them. I'm putting together their basketball hoops, tell them to wait. I'm putting together the table. We're going to eat. You want to eat tonight outside? I got to put the table together, don't I? And you can just sit there, relax, take your time. She doesn't know how hard it is or how easy it is or how much time you're wasting, you know, listening to the White Album out in the backyard.
You could, like, come back inside and just fake, like, yeah, it's going to take forever.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I don't have to fake it. I sweat out in the sun. I sweat no matter what. I could be outside literally doing nothing. I could be outside clipping my toenails, come back in dripping sweat, going, it's impossible out there. I don't know what it, I mean, that thing is so difficult. I could just sit there, not do anything, come in and look like I've been through hell. Doesn't take much faking. But putting together stuff, especially like the indoor stuff, not as much fun. You go to IKEA, you buy a big, you know, bookshelf or a chest or a draw set for a bedroom or something. That's not as fun. Putting together a draw in the middle of winter in your house, not as much fun. Out in the sun, putting together a basketball hoop, much more fun. Although it took forever and I made a bunch of mistakes. And then, like, the pool, I realized I had to fill up the base with water before I started to do some things because it was too heavy and it kept tipping. And half the time, I'm trying to hold it up just to screw it in. You need two hands to tighten everything because you got to hold the nut with the wrench while you tighten it with the socket wrench. It's just a pain in the ass. But sitting out there in the sun, some tunes. Would like to have a couple of, I don't know, high noons or whatever, but, you know, Sundays have now become I got to get prepared for the show. Sundays are my Monday. So happy Monday. We did get to see the Yankees play. We got to see the Mets play. We'll come to that in a bit. Waller calls it a career. All of that to come, but your call is next. Dan in Jersey. What's up, Dan?
Hey, how we doing, man?
Good. How are you?
I was on my I'm alive. I was on my way home from work. And I heard you talking about my sweet prince, Anthony Rizzo.
Yeah.
I know it's pretty controversial what's going on, you know, whatever. Everyone's got their opinions. But I don't know. The way I see him, well, you know, people love him, people hate him, you know.
Yeah, polarizing. I don't know about controversial. That's fair. Good.
Well, you know, however you want to call it, whatever.
I got you.
But, you know, I don't know. The way I see him at this point, I don't know how, you know, I'm not no fancy analyst or nothing, but I see him as a glue guy at this point.
All right, so a glue guy that has to play? Because he's the glue guy?
Yeah, I see him as that locker room guy. When he's on the field, he's there for the dudes, you know? He's there for the boys.
I don't doubt you at all. I think he is, and you saw Verdugo talk about it and how much faith he has in him, and Verdugo, when he was on Mike with the broadcast, talked about how Judge and Rizzo were in his corner to bring him here. He mentioned in the post game he's got supreme confidence in Rizzo. I think Rizzo is clearly one of the leaders of the team. He's a veteran. He's been an all-star. He's won a World Series with the Cubs. Like he's Judge's best friend. And up until a year ago, he was a very good player for the Yankees. Not an excellent player. Not even an all-star, but a solid, very good player. To go along with being a glue guy, which I agree with that assessment on some level. But, I mean, glue guy is not good enough. You don't get to play every day being a glue guy if you suck. And there's no other way to put it. He stinks. Like, I wish it weren't true. And do I have faith he can be better? Sure, because it's hard to imagine him being this terrible. But now we're going on a year. And you can easily just throw it away with, well, the last year was concussion. Okay, what's going on now? I'm sure they've run another test on him, I would think. Like, I don't know. But I don't know what's going on with him. But it's been too long now to just throw it away. It's been too long to dismiss it. You got a full calendar year now where he is a... not major league talent player. And his defense has failed him too. Like, overall, it's fair. Like, I heard Boone say this. He's like, the last 2 months, the defense has been pretty good. He got off to a miserable start, and he made really one play the other day. Like, his defense has been better than I'm probably admitting, but it doesn't feel like Rizzo defense. The other day, he showed some good footwork around the bag. He's been okay defensively. We probably went too far on that off of one error that cost him a game, but, like, he's just not himself. And at the plate, he's useless. He doesn't drive the baseball at all. He doesn't draw walks. He's not doing anything. And they have him in the middle of the lineup. He's killing them. There's only so much glue guy you can have. And I agree he is. He's someone who comes out there. He talks to pitchers who are in trouble. He runs over there immediately. I think he's valuable in that way. I think he's a veteran presence in the clubhouse. He's someone who's actually won. I think he does bring... I don't want to trade him. How could you? But he can't be the everyday first baseman as of right now. He's got to show me something. I'll give him a little bit more time. That's the benefit of having this record, that you're allowed to... You know, Rizzo gets another, you know, few weeks. Maybe he gets to the All-Star break. I don't know. He's going to get some time to pretty much be the starting first baseman. But you can't do this forever. You can't go into the second half of the season. You can't pass the trade deadline if he's still playing like this and just say, hey, what are you going to do? He's our first baseman. That's the team. You can't. Not if you want to win. And like I said, this is the year. We said at the beginning of the year, you should realize it now. Like, even guys we like, Verdugo, who's been really good for this team, someone they need, someone I'm expecting to do good things, someone you expect to play postseason-type baseball and not strike out and put the ball in play and all that. He's not coming back if they sign Soto. They can't give him a contract. They're not going to. Torres probably isn't back. Clay Holmes might not be back. There's a lot of, like, yeah, they'll have Soto, and yes, they'll have Judge, and yes, they'll have Cole, and that's going to be good enough to be a World Series contender without question. But the team's going to look a lot different, relying on a lot of youth and relying on a lot of different things. And, like, this is the year, and you can't just lie back and say, well, listen, Anthony Rizzo's gone next year, but he's our first baseman this year. You got to go out there and do better. There's other better players. But at the same time, you can't move on from him. What are you going to do? What are you going to trade him for? You can't trade Anthony Rizzo. He's untradeable. Phil in Long Island. What's up, Phil?
Yeah, how you doing, C-Mac?
Good. How are you, brother?
Yeah, just calling in. Listen, Rizzo is what he is at this point. Trying to get creative. We know injuries happen. Let's assume everybody stays healthy. What's your plan? What we're going to do with Dominguez if he keeps doing what he's doing at AAA? Because he can obviously be an impact back for us.
No, he's going to keep doing what he's doing in AAA. That's it.
Yeah, you think
if everybody's healthy, he's staying in AAA. What are you going to do? You can't. I understand the want to bring him up. And I had a discussion with Keith. I think it was partially on air when we co-hosted on Friday in the middays. But I completely disagree with him. He's willing to bring him up and be Trent Grisham. I can't do that. I can't. And it's
not even
it's not even necessarily about development necessarily, because I think he is developed enough where I expect him to be a good player. But what am I going to do with Jason Dominguez playing once a week, once every week and a half? Like, I can't. Like, he probably
The Orioles tried to do that with a couple of the younger guys too, and it just don't work.
Yeah, like
that guy Kerchad.
Yeah.
And he came right down.
Yeah.
Guys got to get regular at bat.
No, exactly.
You can't give Judge a first baseman's man. I would love to do it, but you can't do it.
No, I mean, I wouldn't. I think you. It's not the craziest idea for half a year, but it depends on. I mean, I guess. I don't know. Not Judge. I don't know. I don't want to take away Judge's ability in defense. You're hurting two positions defensively. You're hurting an outfield position, whether it's right field or center field. And then you're probably hurting first base, putting someone who hasn't played first base to first base. Like, you're killing two defensive positions with that move. I understand it allows Dominguez to be in the outfield and Judge at first base, and the lineup improves. And I get that aspect of it, but I don't know. But the thing with Dominguez is you can't I don't know what people expect. Right now, Verdugo, you're obviously Soto and Judge, right? Forget that. There's no discussion. So you got Soto and Judge in the outfield. That leaves one outfield position, and Verdugo's been great. You could argue, I know Judge took off right around the same time, but moving Verdugo to cleanup, there's a line of demarcation of the season. The offense before that move and the offense after that move. Like, it's literally that simple. He's been that good for them. And he's the best defense. I know he made the gaffe on Saturday by getting a bad angle on the ball, taking a step in instead of back and having that Freeman line drive hit over his head. But he's the best defensive left fielder in the game right now. Like, we've watched him as Yankee fans, and typically defensive statistics and run saved, even the run saved ones, like, I don't know. For me, defense is much more of an eye test. Offense, I believe in the numbers for the most part. There are some that are overvalued. There are some that are undervalued. But, I mean, for the most part, you could look at the numbers and determine who's having a good season, who's having a bad season. Defense, I don't look at defensive metrics the same. I'm much more of an old school just eye test. And I defy any Yankee fan to call me and tell me Verdugo isn't an excellent left fielder. Excellent. He's brought an attitude to the team. You can't not play Verdugo. And now Stanton, who's coming off a miserable series here, 0 for 13 and 6 strikeouts against the Dodgers. Now, Glasnow and Yamamoto are part of that, but still, struggles here. If it gets to a point where he falls off, well, now we could have a different conversation. I'm open to benching Stanton. I'm open to it. I think you have to be. I think you have to be open to benching Rizzo. You have to be open to benching Stanton. You have to be open to putting the best team out there. And I think they've shown that urgency this year to do things like that. But Stanton's been pretty good. Miserable series. If it starts to fade, if he goes through a major slump, then you know what? You bring up Dominguez. He's a power right-handed off the bench. You have four outfielders now in the mix. Just one of them's playing DH. I mean, it eliminates the idea of being able to, you know, pinch hit or put a guy in the outfield and have one in case of injury. But hey, whatever. In case of injury, someone goes down, you lose the DH. You'll live with it for a game. But that's, you know, if Stanton gets to that point, that's when you bring up Dominguez. But I can't bring up a young 20-year-old kid and never play him. Play him once or twice a week. How could you do that to him? It's not going to benefit him. It's not going to benefit you. Because he's not going to be as productive. He plays every day. So until the Yankees have a place for Dominguez to play every day, there is no other role. Dominguez is a starting player. That's it. There's no other role for him. He's the starting center fielder, or he's the starting center fielder DH, but he's getting at bats every single day. Otherwise, you can't bring him up. And that's fine. He's going to be here forever. If this team is good, and everybody's hitting, and everybody's productive and healthy, he's the starting center fielder next year. And the Judge Soto Dominguez era begins in 2025. That's it. But something tells me he'll have a part to play in this. Something tells me we will see Dominguez, but we won't until it makes sense.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
When this happened, you talked about it on the phone.
He's homered. Derek Jeter homers to tie the game. And there it is. Hit number 3,000.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
Not long, Alex. Don't worry. It wasn't that long. 3:30. McMonagle here with you. And it was just, you could have just let me go, but it happens every once in a while. He came running in. I remember those days. He's trying to figure out how to log all the hours. Something's up. Computer's not working. He's trying to figure it out. He's talking to anybody who will listen. I can't help him. And usually I'm pretty good. I'm one of the very few who've really, you know, I mean, I guess I shouldn't say that. Sal came up as a board op. Everyone interned, you know, Moose. Giannotti was a producer, clearly. But I really feel like my skills of fixing things and getting things done was on another level. I made sure stuff happened. I made sure everything was right. And to see the board out panicking is always one of the great pleasures that you get as a host who's gone through it. Like, other hosts might just be like, oh, geez. Me, I laugh internally because I've been there. I know exactly what it's like to hear dead air. And I knew eventually, like, what happened was, if you didn't hear, it's in the middle of the break. All of a sudden, it stops and there's dead air. And I look up and there's just an empty chair in there. And I'm like, oh, here he comes. He's gonna come running in here any second. And it was very pleasurable. Thank you for that. I need it every once in a while. It's good to just remember, you know, what previous life was like. Working, you know, part-time, doing the overnight, trying to make it through, dealing with stuff. Nobody's here. Who's he going to talk to? There's no engineer here. There's no one here to ask questions. Eddie just walked in. He might be able to help him, but, you know, he's on his own, as we all are eventually. Right, Eddie? At some point, we're all just on our own.
That is true, but I do have the answer for him.
Oh, do you? Good. You can help him out?
I can.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. And to think you were outside panicking. Running around, leaving dead air, leaving me out to dry. Thanks a lot.
I guess you're welcome.
Yeah, sure. Thank you very much. 888-808-1019. 888-808-1019. Many a time, leaving the dead air. I thought he forgot to put on the autopilot to let the commercials play, but he made it through. All right, enough of that. McMonagle here with you. 888-808-1019. We spent a lot of time on the Yankees and their series with the Dodgers. The atmosphere at Yankee Stadium was intense. I wanted to go to the game. I kind of felt awful this morning. I had a late night the night before on Saturday night, a buddy and a neighbor's 40th birthday party. So I was out having a good time on Saturday. I felt crappy all day yesterday. I knew I never have time. The kids wanted the basketball hoop. I never have a chance to put it together. That took longer than I wanted it to. I don't sleep on Sundays, so unfortunately, I didn't go to the game last night. I know I said I was going to go. I want to go. I got to find more time to get to these games. I'm busy. And I ended up not going. I wish I did. The atmosphere was incredible. To go see Luis Gil is going to start. We talk about it. He gets lost in this game. He pitched very well. He does give up two runs. He didn't have his one hit shutout 6 or 7 innings. He was... You know, Teoscar Hernandez gets him again, but he was still pretty good. But the atmosphere in that building, and especially we're going to start to see with Heel, and the atmosphere we're going to get there at Yankee Stadium is going to become electric every time he starts. That is as this team is going to hopefully continue to have this good season, and there's going to be good vibes around the ballpark. Yes, everyone likes to go see a winner, but we're going to really want to see Luis Heel, this rookie sensation, this guy who throws 98 miles an hour, has an unbelievable changeup, getting all these swings and misses, hardly giving up hits, hardly giving up runs. I mean, it's going to start to become, you know, Harvey Day. Like, it's going to start to get there. But last night, it got mixed up in the shuffle of everything else that went on with Dodgers-Yankees. But something else, another atmosphere was going on across the pond as the Mets and Phillies played a couple of games out in London. Mets blow the first game, do typical Met things. And then the second game yesterday was a great comeback, and it's good to get a split. You didn't want to go there and lose both games and lose any momentum. Oh, I'm going to talk about losing momentum, right? You win three games against Washington. You have 2 days off. You fly out to London. You're answering questions all day about food and all the other nonsense you get asked at any time of these big events when regular media and the typical guys who you cover get expounded by everybody from TMZ to whoever else, and obviously European media that don't know the game of baseball as well as, you know, we do here. So you're answering a bunch of dumb questions. Then you play two games. If you get your ass kicked in both of those games and then fly back, suddenly, you know, those three games are a week ago. And it feels like the momentum is kind of lost. But they come back. They take a lead in this game. They blow it. They come back in the ninth inning with one of the more, you know, pedestrian kind of comebacks with hit batters and wild pitches. But ultimately, they tie the game. And then they take the lead and they end the game with trends with one of the great defensive plays you've ever seen from a catcher, where it looks like they're going to blow this game. And that's what I take from this game. And we'll get to, you know, the pomp and circumstance of London, and the field kind of played like it felt like a National League game in the 1980s, right? It had a bouncy kind of, the ball was kind of all over the place. I heard Evan talk a little bit on the Rico about the atmosphere. I mean, 50,000 people were there. The crowd was, I would say, mostly Philadelphia, but there was definitely a contingent for both teams. It sounded good, seemed like they were into it. Evan was talking on the podcast about how it was pretty much, you know, mostly, it wasn't a lot of New Yorkers and Philadelphians who flew out there. It's a lot of just, you know, British people, a lot of just, you know, people from England and London who decided to go see a baseball game, and it seemed like they were into it. And I never have a problem with promoting. People get mad. Why are we doing these games? Why can't we stay in the country? Like, especially baseball that plays 162. I can understand the argument with football where it's like, we only get 8 home games. You're taking a home game away from us so they can go play in Denmark. It's like, all right, cool, but we want our games. 162, you can go play a couple games in London.
I feel like a lot of, well, two things. Because now they're trying to incorporate soccer sort of the other way around, where they're trying to take games in England and bring them here for a week. And as a soccer fan, I think that's completely stupid. I don't agree with it. But with baseball, I kind of understand just because of the amount of games. And I think the reason why, or a big reason why there were more Philly fans is because Rob McElhenney was there.
Mm-hmm.
And he owns a team now.
Yeah.
And I feel like he's sort of grabbed attention of people from the UK that has made, because he's so adamant about Philly sports that has made Brits, I guess, Philly fans.
Hmm. I mean, because I heard that there were Philly bars there, like they, yeah. So they're somewhat popular out in London. But it was a good atmosphere. It was fun. The games were pretty good. And again, this game,
the commentating too. Did you hear the...
Yeah, you know what? I was going to ask you to get that for me. We'll play it. Yeah, we'll play it. I heard Michael Kay on the regular, the broadcast we watched, and I thought I didn't think he was bad or anything. I thought he sounded different, though. It was almost like he put on a different voice when he was doing, like, a national game as opposed to the Yankee game. I thought his inflection was different. I thought his speech pattern kind of sounded different. I thought Michael Kay sounded just different in the broadcast. It was weird. Maybe it's because I'm not used to him being with those broadcasters, Tim Kirchin, and like but the whole thing sounded different to me. But I agree. Like, they should play. I was listening to Lori coming in, and they talked about it. It should have been televised. We should have gotten a British play-by-play guy. It would have added to the element of it. Especially, you know, it's not like you're in a country that doesn't speak English. I mean, it's obviously English. You can understand it. So let's hear the call of the great last play by Torrens to turn a double play on a ball that, in the moment, we all know the Mets are losing that game. That's what I take from this game. What I take from this game is the Mets are going to lose, right? The bullpen's been awful for them. Philly's the best team in the National League, arguably the best team in all of baseball. They're having this rally to come back. There is no stopping it. They are going to lose this game. They have lost this game. They have blown more games in the eighth and ninth inning than any team in baseball. And as you watch the game, Met fans, you know you felt like this game was going to be a disaster, right? Out in London, big time, prime time game. This series getting a lot of attention. They're going to blow it. And instead, they get one of the better defensive, more heads-up defensive plays from catcher. I don't know if I've ever seen that play. I mean, I don't know if I've ever seen the catcher field it himself. We've seen like 1-2-3 double plays. But for the catcher to run out there, get it, backtrack to home, and get enough on it to throw the first, because I'll tell you, when I was watching the play, when he lets the throw go, I am petrified it's going up the right field line. Like, that's a tough throw to make. The angle he's got to throw it with the runner running down first baseline, that is as much as it looks like a difficult play, I would venture to say that's even more of a difficult play than we even understand. That is a great defensive play to end a game, secure a split with Philadelphia. To have, you know, the comeback, the whole thing, that's a big win to keep some momentum here that they desperately need. You couldn't allow, I know it's three games against Washington, but it's three games against Washington, and now you got Miami coming up, a team that you should probably beat, you know, and hopefully sweep. But if you had this little couple of days answering dumb questions, taking all this time to go to London, big series, everybody's promoting it, and you go out there and you lose both games and you lose it getting blown out in the first one, playing typical Met baseball, and then blowing a lead again in the ninth to lose another game, that's the kind of thing that it's what bothered me about the Arizona Diamondback series. Like, you play well, you're in a little bit of a momentum, you had the players meeting, Lindor's hitting a little bit, you go out there and you take two games from Arizona in convincing fashion, and then you blow the next two. Like, you got to try and build momentum. And to throw away the Washington series with getting beaten twice by Philadelphia would have been that for me. It would have been a major momentum killer. And now you keep that momentum alive with a very good win, and now you head right into a Miami series that hopefully one of the worst teams in baseball, you can find a way to continue the winning, and then now you get on a roll. But here, let's hear that play, because I'm telling you, this is one of the better catcher's plays I've seen a catcher make. And to end the game with Nick Castellanos at the plate, who's starting to get hot, off to a terrible start this year for Philadelphia, but starting to get hot, and everything is spinning in the wrong way for the Mets, and yet again, they are about to blow a game, the base is loaded, and you come through with this great defensive play. It's really a great win for the Mets. And here's how it sounded. Who is this? This is the Turner.
So it's TNT Sports. It's different from our TNT.
Right, I gotcha.
And it's Darren Fletcher, not the former man, not the former player.
I gotcha.
Different commentator.
All right. Yeah. Darren Fletcher, TNT Radio.
And Castellanos' bat explodes, and they're going to get the runner at home. They're going to get the double play to win the game. What an end! The shattered bat, the runner out at home plate, and the ball fired into the glove at the first baseman, Pete Alonso, and the New York Mets somehow withstand the Phillies rally, and they win game two in London 6-5.
Yeah, I mean, that's a big-time win, a big-time play, and that's a great call. I would have much rather have seen that, not to knock Michael Kay, I don't really care, but I would have loved to have gotten that feel. Why not get that flavor of London if we're going to be in London? I thought it was good. That's a good call. And it would have brought a little bit more juice to it all. But, I mean, ultimately, it's two games. I thought it worked for the most part. I don't know if, you know, the stadium was a dump necessarily. I mean, the hops, I mean, you could tell the ball is bouncing all over the place. It felt like, you know, watching a game, you know, watching the Cardinals play in the 80s, like those very symmetrical, perfectly round, you know, turf fields where the ball gets through the infield ridiculously fast. And, you know, everything bounces really high. It feels like you're playing on carpet. It kind of had that momentum, that kind of feel to it. And Jeff, I got to give Jeff McNeil, who we've been all over. The one thing, too, in that rally, Jeff McNeil comes through with the only hit of it. I mean, when they take the lead. It was really pass balls, and they hit Pete Alonso. But McNeil comes through with the big hit that sets it up first and third. And you got to give him credit, because I will tell you, I still don't think he's very good. And I love that the Mets benched him. But he doesn't play in the first game. I think it was four straight games without McNeil in the lineup. And he comes in and gets the biggest hit of the game, really, that leads to the victory. And I think, the more I think about Jeff McNeil's situation, I talked about it the other day. Like, I would love to move him. I don't know what the market is for him necessarily. I know I got a tweet before saying the Yankees should trade for him, right? They're looking to replace Gleyber Torres. I'm not looking to get Jeff McNeil in here. I'm sorry. I know Mets have had a history of coming to the Yankees and performing well, but no thank you. But I think you got to, I don't know if you could just leave him on the bench. Iglesias has been good, but you almost got to play Jeff McNeil and hope he gets hot and you can move him. Same thing with like Quintana. Like, he's been arguably their worst starting pitcher. Like, in this very surprise of this rotation pitching very well, Quintana, who is supposed to be their ace without Kodai Senga, has really been pretty bad and was bad again. He can't get out of the fourth inning. He's like, there's just, he's had a rough season, but I don't know if I could, like, again, the Mets are riding this thing about, you want to compete, and I understand. Because I'm the king of, hey, anything can happen. I say it all the time. Last year I was saying the same thing with the Yankees. Just get in. If anything can happen, you sneak in. Anything can happen. Same thing with the Mets. We saw the Arizona Diamondbacks get to the World Series. But ultimately, like, I don't know how they feel about this team. And sure, anything can happen, but they have to be much closer than they are now. Stop telling me how many games out they are from the wild card. The entire National League is in front of them. Like, it's a jumbled up mess. And grant you, you're not that far out, but I mean, you need everyone to play poorly. It's just, to me, I'm still thinking about what they said at the trade deadline last year about this season. Sure, anything can happen. And we'll get to more of what Steve Cohen had to say. But even Steve Cohen said, well, listen, if you get to the playoffs at, four games under 500, it's nice to make the playoffs and anything can happen. But ultimately, how do you feel about your year? Like, I don't think they want to do that. I just get the sense, especially with now Stearns running things, I think he's looking to move and get more pieces. I think he's looking to see if Jeff McNeil can play well for the next few weeks and trade him. I want to see if they can give Quintana a couple of starts and figure out a way to trade him. Luis Severino, Manaea, see if you can get him pitching, better. Well, he hasn't been terrible. He has these innings where he makes mistakes, but like, if you can move him, like, I would think, I'd be very surprised. I think the Mets would really have to play very well for the next 3 or 4 weeks. Because I think the plan is, which in my mind was indicated on tweets by the owner about, hey, nothing we could do until the trade deadline when someone suggests blowing it up. And you got Stearns in here, and he clearly wants to build a team in his image. They didn't do much this offseason. Like, I think it's going to take a significant jump from where they are now to get to a place where they're not looking to deal. So, and you could argue that they have enough of pitching where, Buddo is good, McGill is coming in pitch well, Peterson, obviously Christian Scott. Like, you have a bunch of different guys who've actually shown you they can, give you some good starts here at the major league level, where you could argue you could trade a Quintana, and considering he's your worst starting pitcher, and still compete and not consider it some sort of, death knell to the season or give up in some way. Like, you can move him and still compete. You can move Jeff McNeil and still tell yourself you're competing. Like, there are guys who get traded no matter what the situation is. But ultimately, at least you get the split and you keep momentum for this team. Because you had to have that three-game sweep of Washington stick. Because if you go in and get your ass kicked for two games in London, no one cares about the three games against Washington. Everyone's talking about how you can't compete with Philadelphia. And instead, they get off the deck, no less, come back, Jeff McNeil in the middle of a rally, and then You make one of the great defensive plays we've seen from a catcher to end a game and hold off a surging Philadelphia team as you're heading to go play Miami. You win a couple games here. You win another 2-3 games against Miami, and suddenly now you're on a stretch of winning 6 or 7 out of your last 8. Eric in Ronkonkoma. What's up, Eric?
Hey, C-Mac. Good morning. How you doing?
Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good, good. You know, it's funny you just said that about the amount of amount of games out of the wild card, because I've actually been saying it to several people for like the last week. It's driving me crazy. I can't listen to that every day.
I mean, that's what people are going to tell you when they try and justify the Mets. And look,
Yeah,
but they're not wrong necessarily, because here, looking at the standings right now, they are, if this thing will ever load, they are 3 games out of a wild card. Totally true.
Right.
But they're
well and good.
They're a game and a half worse than the Nationals. They're 2 games worse than the Diamondbacks. They're 2.5 worse than the Pirates. They're 3 games back of the Cardinals. Like, I mean, you need, I mean, all of those teams. Like, they're behind. That's a lot of teams to jump, even if it's only 3 games.
Well, exactly right. Look, this is the way I phrased it to somebody the other day. I said, you know, because I really don't care to look at that. The way I saw it was this. You know, if the Mets are, let's say, 5 games over 500 when they hit September,
right,
then the outlook is very good for them to be in a position to get into a playoff spot, you know, with still a month to go. I mean, I can't sit there. That's all everyone's talking about. I mean, literally every day. I mean, we're only a week into June. I mean, we're not even halfway through the season yet, and every single day. I just wanted to touch on that since you brought it up. But, you know, and it's interesting also, too, as far as having beaten them Washington, because Washington just swept Atlanta. You know, so right. Who knows? I mean, the whole thing is a roller coaster ride in the National League, which is crazy. And obviously they're having their issues with ever since Acuña went down. But one thing I wanted to you opened the show by talking about the you know, some of the comments by Yankee fans and whatever, given the Dodgers series.
Yeah,
I mean the first call after the Yankee post game from a Yankee fan was that he called up and said that Soto was literally hiding from the Dodgers. You know, the fact that he was out for a few days because he didn't want to face the Dodgers. And they went 10 scoreless innings in the first game against the Dodgers. Now, look, I'm not a Yankee fan, I'm a Mets fan. But, I mean, literally the first game, he was blaming and saying that he wasn't injured, that he just happened to be out right before they played the Dodgers.
Right.
And I'm like, that's how you took a 2-1 loss in 11 innings, when, especially with the ghost runner on there. If that were regular extra innings, I mean, who knows how that could have turned out.
Yeah,
but the we want Soto chant. Some of these things are just like bizarre. I mean, I actually commend Judge for making that comment, because it's just, you know, sometimes you got to slap these fans back into reality.
I mean, listen, I thank you for the call. I love the fact Judge said something, because it's not taking on the fans. Like, there are times when you could take on the fans. And, like, you know, Lindor did, like Julius Randle did. Like, there are times you take on the fans. That's a losing endeavor. But for the captain to just acknowledge, like, hey, like, I didn't love that. Like, it's not helping anybody. And then for Grisham to do what he did, I felt great for him. That's because I feel bad for Trent Grisham, because he gets a lot of crap here. And I understand he hasn't played well. He doesn't play. We've talked over and over again about how this Yankee team is handling things differently. And one of the things they're doing differently this year is they are playing their players every day. Like, previous years, they have given, you know, to steal a term from basketball, the load management stuff. Like, Judge gets days off. Other guys get days off. The bench plays. They have done that for years. They want to keep guys involved. They don't let guys just waste away. Jones, is the utility infielder of Jones, he hasn't played. When's the last time he played? They never let guys just waste away on the bench like this. And this year they are. They're playing their guys every single day. Trent Grisham doesn't play enough to Oh, he's hitting 083. All right. He comes in every week and a half and gets four at bats. Like, it's not easy. And typically he gets it off of tough pitching because those are the days they choose to give guys off or whatever. Like it's tough. And so now he's played a couple games in a row and he hits a huge 3-run home run as the stadium is chanting the pinch hit for him. And I love that Judge said something about it. One, I love Judge goes out there and plays the way he plays, which is just, I mean, he's the best hitter in the world. And it's just scary how good he is. And the idea, he was terrible in April. And in 1 month, he has the best numbers in all of baseball. He's hitting over 300. He's got the OPS by a mile. He's second in RBIs. He's first in home runs. And he was bad in April. That's how good this guy is. It's how dangerous this guy is, how explosive he is. And not only does he go out there and hit the mammoth home run to give them that extra run cushion, that little bit of insurance heading into the ninth inning, but then after the game, he calls out the fans. He lets them know this is silly. Like, I wish, and I'm glad he's doing it. And I'm hoping he does it more because the Yankee, there was talking points about, you know, I don't know how much it is. I think it's a little foolish to say, oh, guys don't want to sign here because the fan base is tough and the booing has gotten much. And while I agree, the vitriol with the fans has gotten crazy. The hatred they have for a lot of the players and Boone and Cashman, I think it's absolutely nuts. I've been arguing about it forever. And when this team, like, the team had a major problem with the way Hicks was treated, the way Gallo was treated, they did. They didn't like it. And then, obviously, when Judge was getting booed in the postseason by a smattering of idiots, like, not, it wasn't like the whole crowd, but that really was just like an eye-opening thing for a lot of the teammates who were like, Jesus, this guy hit 62 home runs and carried us to this position, and he's, you know, 0 for his last 4, and he's getting booed. But that's the nature of the beast. But for a Judge to call it out for a player who really hasn't gotten a fair shake, and that's how I view it with Trent Grisham. He has not gotten a fair shake to show you what kind of player he can be. We saw what kind of player he could be in San Diego. He's a Gold Glove caliber outfielder. He performed in the playoffs. He kicked the tail out of the Mets. He had a huge series against the Mets 2 years ago. He's proven he can perform in the postseason a little bit. He's a pretty good player. He has gotten absolutely zero opportunity to prove on any level what kind of player he could be for the Yankees. Zero. And I understand everybody wants to see Juan Soto. One, I don't even think that was the spot for him in the sixth inning. But never mind, whatever the case may be, to go into a full chant and scream for another player. Well, like you're going to dictate what happens. That Boone's going to sit there and go, I don't want to pinch hit Soto. Oh, but the crowd wants it, so let's go do it. All you've done is make the player realize that nobody wants to see him hit. But you know what? He internalized and hits a huge 3-run home run that turns the game around. And Judge is the leader of this team, and he stuck up for his guy, and I love it. I love it. That's a captain right there. That is a captain. He was willing to scold you to protect his guy. I mean, it's very easy to do when you're the captain and you're having the greatest May and June anyone's ever seen, but he did it. 358, McMonagle here with you. One more hour. 888-808-1019. 888-808-1019. We still got things to get to. Waller is retired. What impact does it have for the Giants? And more than that, just the what level of disappointment is Waller? Because I feel like we've kind of just sort of grown used to it. We've heard for a while now that this was possible and even leaning this way, but and off last year's terrible season, it's easy to just, poo-poo, it's not a big deal. But when he first got traded here, I think we felt differently about it. It's a pretty, you know, what happened to him and a couple other of these players here for the Giants, which we'll get into here next, I'm pretty disappointed in the overall what happened with Waller and what he could have brought to this team and what we all know what Daniel Jones could, y'all give him a tight end. Give him a large pass-catching wide receiver. And Daniel Jones will take off. Well, Waller's taking off.